Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips, the PC. It is Saturday, the 23rd day of February, Anno Domini 2019, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Yes, Steve Ray, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the southeast, southwest.
Again, dodging all the snow in Vegas, or could be anywhere. Or in Los Angeles.
Relatives in Arizona.
Okay.
And they're just a little freaked out.
It's entertaining for us, though.
My wife's family's there.
Is that right? My sister-in-law posted pictures. Oh, my God, snow. I said, that's a dusting.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Right. You would think that was not enough sugar on a donut.
Right.
And you're complaining about the amount of snow. Now, my brother-in-law's sister lives much farther north in Arizona. Mm-hmm. They had a foot of snow.
Sure. Yeah, different elevation, right?
Right.
So is it the same way in Arizona as it is in New York and Pennsylvania, where all the shelves at the grocery store go completely empty with bread and milk?
Yeah, they all go out and get their agave drinks and things.
Sounds about right.
Well, now, they're not going to be able to get out the first thing in the morning. You know, it's going to upset their schedule because that little bit of snow won't melt until close to lunchtime.
And exactly.
That throws their whole schedule off.
Now, on the other hand, there's my daughter, who's a transplanted Rochesterian.
Yes.
She's living down in Tucson. She got a dusting as well.
She's just smirking the whole time.
And she was just laughing the whole time. I said, yeah, you all right down there? She said, Dad, I still got my all-weather tires on.
Yeah. She's doing donuts in the parking lot, laughing the whole time.
Yeah, she's pretty amused by it all.
I bet.
Well, to hear some of them panic, they do actually panic.
They panic.
Because, this one's only looking at it from their point of view, they don't have the equipment like we do.
The infrastructure.
We get, a foot of snow, no biggie. All right, the plows are out there a little bit, and they start getting the salt down, and it takes a little bit. But we're used to that.
Right.
You get down there, and they don't have any of that. As, what are we going to...
Right.
Hilarious.
The roads are completely different as well.
Yeah.
Our roads are crowned, so they're a little bit taller at the top than they are at the sides, so water runs down. And in other places, it's just not as big a concern. There isn't as much engineering that goes into the infrastructure itself. So, yeah, I could understand why if you've got little troughs where all the cars drive and suddenly those are filled with water or slush or snow or ice that... It definitely does make things seem weird. And if you're not used to driving in it, you know how it is here over the first two snowfalls every year.
Amateur hour.
Yeah, many decades ago, my aunt,
takes God people a while to remember that.
Yeah, my aunt moved to Silver Spring, Maryland.
Okay.
She's a little, she's a typical Italian nonna. She's about 5 foot nothing.
Right.
Maybe weighs 40 pounds if she's carrying bricks.
Yeah, she can see over the steering wheel.
Barely. And she drives a Cadillac.
Okay.
So she goes down there the first winter. They actually had about 3 inches of snow, maybe 2 inches.
Mm-hmm.
The city shut down, absolutely shut down. She gets in her car and she's driving. She's tooling around. She's a Rochester gal.
Yeah.
And she goes, every friend she went to visit, oh, my God, Rose,
how did you
get here?
Yes.
She looks at there. She said, it's not even touching the hubcap.
She holds out her car keys and says, hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the place was shut down. Shelves were bare. People were locked in.
Right.
You know, there were people who weren't going to leave until the snow melted off the driveway.
Yeah.
But, you know, for us it's like a...
Yeah. Tuesday.
Can you see over it? We're good. It's Tuesday. All right, to the news. On Wednesday, Samsung introduced their newest cell phone, the Galaxy Fold.
Oh, yeah, I saw this.
Or some other F word. As the name implies, this phone was the culmination of decades of science fiction dreams. A foldable phone. On the outside, it's a thick phone with a 4.6-inch display, but then the magic happens. You can unfold it, and suddenly it becomes a 7.3-inch tablet with no center hinge.
No seam, yeah.
No seam. The outside screen shuts off and you're looking at a screen you wouldn't have imagined on a phone. The phone is thick because both halves contain a battery, which pretty much doubles the life of the small phone screen and is necessary to power the tablet-sized screen. There are a couple of problems with it, however. First is that fold. It's not really a fold. You can't put a crease in even the so-called foldable displays without killing them. So it's really more of a kind of bendy curve, which means it doesn't fold flat. There's a bit of a gap at one end. How big a deal that is will remain to be seen. It's going to be a problem for some people fitting it into a pocket and not then breaking it.
Right.
Right. The other problem is the cost. This phone costs... Are you sitting down?
Yes, please do.
$1,980.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Plus tax.
And that's okay because it's...
Double
it's,
no.
It's going to be the last phone you'll ever need, right? You won't ever have to replace it with anything
else.
It's
the last phone you can ever afford.
Take out a loan.
And that $1,980 plus tax brings the phone to over $2,100 for technology that is completely unproven. If you're the sort of person who absolutely must have the latest technology because either your job or your ego demands it, then you'll gladly pony up the $2,000, actually $2,100 with tax, for the wow factor alone. Many more of us will likely wait until the second or third or tenth generation models come out or other companies start jumping on the bandwagon at a lower price. And certainly many of us will wait to see how well that display holds up over months of folding and unfolding it multiple times a day. Think about how many times you open and close your phone every day. And now this completely unproven technology is going to be creasing and uncreasing, creasing and uncreasing. Stick it in your pocket and sit down on
it.
It's just, it gets, it's kind of...
The case design is going to be rather unique on that.
It's going to be pretty interesting.
I mean, most companies are going to, I would think... steer towards, we can protect it from accidental sitting on it and everything else.
Right.
So they're going to have to do some type of Frogger case or something else like that.
Right.
That's really going to protect it against the, the folds.
Well, but even so, I mean, if you put in something like an OtterBox, then that OtterBox has to open up. Right. Otherwise, you're going to have to take the phone out every time, open it up, close it up, put it back in. But nobody's going to do that. Anyway. Our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you is Samsung introduces the Galaxy Fold. Your choices are I simply must have one. Oh, I should read that in Thurston Howell III's voice.
All right.
I simply must have one, lovey.
Yeah, start at the, take it from the top.
Yeah. Samsung introduced the Galaxy Fold, and your choices are I simply must have one, lovey. It certainly does look tempting. Perhaps I'll wait a while. And I can't wait for Apple to invent this.
All right, next time we're going to do all different Gilligan's Island characters for each
next
item.
Next time. So far, we've got 25 votes. Perhaps I'll wait a while, shockingly, as the vast majority of the votes, followed by I can't wait for Apple to invent this. But, you'll have more to say. We've already had we had somebody accuse me of a typo. It can't be 1980. Can't be, the cost cannot be $1,980. So if you move to the forum, scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff, you'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under the poll discussion is 23 Feb 19, Samsung introduces the Galaxy Fold. So far, we've got 5 people who posted in there. Keep it polite, everyone. Please keep it family friendly.
That's right. It's supposed to be fun.
Yeah. And join us there. And of course, you can join us here by giving us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. You know, I get it. It's a brand new phone. It's a brand new technology.
Yeah, it's an innovation.
And there's something called the economy of scale.
Sure.
You know, the first one of something you make is $100 million.
Yep.
And the second one costs a nickel.
That's right.
But you have to amortize your costs over a certain number of them to make back that $100 million.
That's right. Well, you know, that's what Elon Musk did with Tesla. He had the Roadster first that was supremely expensive. It was built on an existing chassis. It was just a technology demonstration. And he used that money to bankroll the Model S, and he used that to bankroll the Model X, and then...
Yep.
He's working on the next round of products. And, you kind of take your profits from one thing and leverage it into the next thing.
Yep, and that's essentially, I'm sure, what Samsung is doing with the Galaxy Fold. But it is a pretty nifty phone. We'll see how well it lasts.
Yeah, it's the first technology I've seen in probably since the iPad where I have looked at it and said, oh, that is just so new and different.
Yep.
That it really piques my excitement, which is admittedly not something I've had in a long time for technology devices. Yep. Because they've all been sort of the kind of the same. They've all been a index card size slab of plastic and glass that you can touch and stroke and swipe your finger across. So this is something new and different, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
Well, and that's something that people have accused Apple of no longer being innovative.
True.
And that's something other people have accused other companies of copying Apple. How many different ways can you make a cell phone?
It's all kind of come to the same place ever since you've picked a particular form factor.
Right. And now we have these foldable displays. I'm waiting for the day. There was a science fiction series that had people would take out a little cylinder and then pull the phone out sideways from that. And it was a big screen. And then they'd roll it back up again.
That's like a scroll.
That's actually more feasible than this foldable phone.
Right.
Because they've actually, I think it's LG has a TV that does this.
Okay.
LG, Sony, somebody has a TV that does this. And now, because you're rolling it up on a cylinder, it's not going to crease.
That's right. Yeah, the angle that you're having it bend around is much greater.
Right, and all you have to do now is worry about the spring.
Right, so it's sort of like a window blind.
Right, exactly.
But sideways.
And that's not a new technology. So theoretically, that would not be a problem. So this concept of foldable phones opens up that form factor to something beyond what Apple created and everybody else followed, because a phone is essentially a bar of soap with a window on it.
It is right now, yeah, that's for sure. And it's all about, you know, where do you put the fingerprint sensor or how do you handle authentication?
And how many cameras do you have on the back? Who cares?
Right. So, yeah, and the other thing is this kind of perpetuates the let's have a display that we look at rather than let's wear a display that we look through, or let's have a piece of goggles that obstructs our view to reality to show us some sort of virtual reality or something else.
Right. I don't even know that Google does glass anymore. We've still got a local company, Vuzix.
Yeah. They came and did a demo at App Rochester several months ago. And that was really impressive to see the types of things they're doing. There's a guy who comes and fills the vending machines where I work. And he has, I don't know if they're from Vuzix, but he has augmented reality glasses on that tell him, they allow him to take inventory on what's on the machine. They allow him to specify what he's going to put in each slot. They tell him which items have been selling well and which items have not, and it's all right there in his field of vision. And he's got speech recognition as well, so he can dictate what the stock levels are. Really impressive.
Nice.
To see that.
Very, very cool. All right, we should jump to the phones. Our first caller waiting patiently is Fred from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Fred. What's up?
Hi, guys. First off, $2,000 phone, forget it.
Yeah, I'm out.
But last week, Tim from Webster called was asking about Linux, and he brought up a good point that I guess I never thought about. I mean, you guys have been talking a long time about how, Linux is very similar to Windows. You just got to learn new things. But I guess it never occurred to us that one of the things that might be keeping people away from it is really that first step of how to pick one and how to put it on the machine.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. We mostly buy computers with Windows already installed these days.
Right.
That's true.
So we don't have that experience that us old timers had of buying a hunk of metal and turning it into a computer.
No, and I think that's what's going to keep a lot of people away from it. Now, I'm going to suggest Linux Mint. It would be a really good first choice for somebody that wants to get into it. And one reason is it's been number one on DistroWatch for like years.
Yep.
It just dropped briefly to, 2018 it dropped to number three. But it's a very nice desktop that anybody that runs Windows is going to immediately recognize. I mean, there's got one panel down at the bottom, the clock and the network stuff is out on the right. You got a menu key on the left. I mean, it looks a lot like Windows, and it'd just be more familiar to people.
Right, and that's one of the reasons that Linux Mint has become so popular is because it so closely mimics the look and feel of, I suppose I shouldn't use that term, there's legal implications there, of Windows. And if you and we talked about this last week or the week before, if you're interested in a look and feel that's similar to the Mac, there's Enlightenment, and that looks very much like a Mac. And again, as we said last week, some of the programs will be different. You're not going to run Office, but you can run Microsoft Office, but you can run LibreOffice. And aside from the icons, it looks dang near the same.
Right.
The people, it certainly does all the same stuff.
The people that I talk to who might be interested in this, the big thing that they talk about is, what about my peripherals? What about my printers, my scanners, things like that? How is driver support for
20 years ago, it was horrible.
Okay.
Now, I haven't bought anything that didn't just plug and play.
Okay.
In fact, I bought a scanner. I bought a 3-in-1 printer. Right. It's and I stuck it on my network. I didn't plug it into any computers. I just stuck it on the network. And there's a program on Linux called Simple Scan. And I thought, what the heck? All it can do is not work.
Right.
I opened it up. I added the printer. I went in and added the printer. And it said, I said, go find it on the network. It found it on the network and it installed the driver. It said, you're ready to go. And then I thought, I didn't pay attention to the driver because all I wanted to do was print. And then one day I thought, scanner, what the heck? Let's see if it works.
Yeah.
So I opened up a program called Simple Scan and it said, oh, you seem to have the Brother Yada Yada printer scanner. Do you want to use that? Yes, I do. And over the network, magic happened. So you're right. The drivers used to be an issue. But now, for any modern thing, I mean, it's, you know, you
don't hand it your 15-year-old printer and expect compatibility there.
Well, you'll be able to connect it probably locally with a generic driver, but it may not do everything that printer can do.
Okay.
I mean, a 15-year-old printer, what do you expect?
Right.
But newer printers, they have good drivers for them. They do everything you expect them to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Linux Mint.
Of course.
Linux Mint, very, very cool.
Of course, even Windows 10, I mean, at some point, if you've got older stuff, you may, you know, lose driver support also.
No, that is true.
That's exactly right. Yeah. You're exactly right there, Fred.
Hey, there's an interesting website, if you ever want to go to it. It's called slant.co. It's not slant.com. It's slant.co, but it lets you compare one version of Linux against another. I mean, you can put PC Linux on the left and Linux Mint on the right, and it tells you, like, which one's better for beginners, which one's better for somebody who likes Windows, which one's better on the hardware. It's a cool website to just compare one versus the other.
Oh, that sounds like it could be really informative.
Very cool. Thanks.
One last thing. Again, anybody that wants to get started on Mint, if you go to their website, they got a really nice installation guide, step-by-step instructions, pictures on what to do, and it's not because it's complicated to install, but it just runs you through it so that you won't be surprised. You know, here's your choices of what you should use, like which version. There's a couple different versions. They suggest Linux Mint Cinnamon with 64-bit because that seems to be, you know, what they put the most of their time in, and it really looks nice. One thing. They tell you, you know, what the minimum hardware requirements are. But if you're going to go 64-bit anything, don't you need 4 gig or more of RAM?
You're best off with 4 gig or more, yes. These days, particularly because people want to multitask, 4 gig is an absolute minimum, and 8 gig is even better. You can run a 64-bit system in 2 gig. And it's not a problem if you're mainly doing one thing at a time.
Okay.
But if you want to multitask.
The one thing is I just suggest people stay off of 32-bit Linux because Chrome stopped support for their 32-bit version of the Chrome browser a couple years ago. Because the number of people that run Linux, the number of people that run 32-bit Linux, it just wasn't worth them for it to keep them up. So I think everybody should be on 64-bit now.
Right. All right, thanks.
All right. Take it easy.
All right.
Thank you so much. One of the problems with something like Windows 7 is you may be running a 32-bit version of that.
Right.
And that's going to be a problem as time goes on as well.
Sure.
Of course, Microsoft is solving that problem by abandoning Windows 7 entirely. So oh. I suppose
I'm
that's
well aware.
Done.
Oh, geez.
Well
Let
aware.
Me look surprised.
Right.
Where we, yeah, where we work, we are actively racing towards Windows 10. To replace Windows 7.
Well, that's what Microsoft is forcing with this $50 support for the first year, $100 support for the second year, $200 support for the third year. By the time you're done with that, you're really at the point where you're thinking to yourself, maybe we ought to move out of Windows 7.
Our place is going to be hurting.
Well, you know what? You got to make that decision at some point.
No, yeah, you've got to have a plan for what's next. You know, the technology doesn't just sit there.
And nobody likes change. Certainly nobody likes to spend money on change. That makes change three times as bad. But well, there will come a point where you don't really get much of a choice anymore.
Yeah, it's literally, you got to do it or you know,
right.
get left behind.
Right. And you know, everybody will say, well, we don't really need support. And then the first time a virus sweeps through your company... And somebody says, well, fix it. And you say, I can't.
Right. Yes. Here is the printed and signed document that says that you didn't want us to move.
Right. Right. We cannot fix this any longer. The fixes don't exist.
Too bad. So sad.
Too bad. So sad. So we can either, you know.
It's a cost of doing business to keep your technology current.
It's a cost of doing business. And that's why so many companies have, at least in the back end, Linux.
Yeah.
So Linux is free.
Well, and companies buy business continuity insurance for when they have situations where there's things have happened that are outside of their control and they have a disruption in revenue or other things.
Right.
And so, you know, that's the decision you make is do I really want to be protected against this or do I want to be a bit more proactive and plan for the change rather than have the change happen to me?
Yeah.
Many years ago. I went to my then new boss and said, we need our own server for mail.
Okay.
And he said, what will that cost me? And I told him how much it would cost for the server. I said, the hardware is going to cost X. And he said, what about the software? I said, well, Linux is free. Mail is free.
Right.
And everything's free.
And you have people who know how to configure it.
And I said, we have people who can do that. And he said, what do you mean it's free? He said, it's free. He said, how long has this been going on? I told him, he said, why are we doing this? I said, look, I'm proposing it.
Don't shoot the messenger.
It's my idea.
It's my idea. I cannot tell you the last time I bought software. I can't tell you. I don't buy software anymore.
Nothing good for your phone? Better clients for... Some social media or something else?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't like people. I don't do social media on my phone. I don't do it on my phone because I don't want to be tracked.
That's right. 2 hours a week. That's all you allow. People to call in, ask what they need to ask.
So ask what they need to ask.
This is it, people.
Need.
If you want to get a hold of Nick, if you want to talk to him this week, this is the time.
The place. This is the time. This is now. the reality is that I have a life. I go out and do things. I don't spend a lot of time on my phone.
Right. Okay.
All right. That music tells me we're going to take a little break whether we want to or not. But that's okay because that will give you a chance to give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Before we get back to the phones, I just wanted to acknowledge that Christian from Connecticut, who is a frequent caller, has passed away. And our thoughts and prayers go out to his family. At this time. Now back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Greece, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Well, I don't know why, but sometime recently my spell check in Chrome stopped.
Okay. Which OS are you running? Chrome OS, right? On a Chromebook?
It's in Windows 10, though.
Oh, Windows 10.
In the Chrome browser, Windows 10.
Okay.
Okay, and you, was there an upgrade?
Not that I'm aware of. Yeah, I didn't change anything specifically.
Right. And it's only in Chrome, yeah?
Right, I went over to whatever they're calling, Edge, I guess, whatever it is. And it highlighted my misspellings there, but nothing gets highlighted or suggested or anything in Chrome. And right now I'm in Chrome settings under language, under privacy and languages, and English United States is checked as being on.
Are you using the native spell checker, or is it an extension that you might have had installed? Because I see that there might be an extension for that as well.
This one, it's just the inboard.
Okay.
Onboard.
All right. So
under Chrome settings.
All right. So under settings, if you scroll all the way down and click on advanced settings.
Yep.
Under privacy.
Yep. That's where I am.
It says use a web service to help resolve spelling errors.
Yeah. I saw that before, and I think it's still on.
Well, if it's on, it should be blue.
Yeah.
And that.
I turned it off again. I had it on, and I didn't think that helped.
Turn it off, turn it on. Okay. That's the typical.
Yeah,
that's the actual advice.
Try restarting it, yeah.
But that's what I've done, and it works for me.
Chrome comes with a native spell checker that used to be enabled by default. Let's see. Involves routing text through Gmail servers. All right, we're actively searching on your behalf here.
Yeah. Hopefully a better result than I did when I searched.
Right.
Because all the searches I had sent me right back to the same place.
Did you go to the languages and the languages and input settings area?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, under languages and input, you can have spell check, and your first choice is English?
United States English.
Yeah.
Yep,
and then there's a
blue.
There's a custom spelling thing where you can add words, but if both of those are on, it should be working. And I at this point don't know why it wouldn't be.
Or you might try uninstalling Chrome and reinstalling it, and your settings are saved in a different file, so those should not get clobbered.
Okay, I can do that.
That would be my next step.
I just went through resetting the startup and all that stuff.
Is there
an option at the bottom?
Nick, is there a native spell checker in Windows 10 itself that might be conflicting?
It shouldn't in any way conflict, no.
Okay.
Because Google doesn't do that. They have essentially their own for that. So
another alternative, again, would be to look for a third-party extension that might be able to handle spell checking.
Something like Grammarly or...
There's one called Easy Autocorrect. There's one called Ginger that does spelling and grammar, which is nice.
Yeah, it is turned off by default, but under settings, advanced settings, you should find it there. And I'm sorry, I don't. There's no other place you can turn it on or off.
Right.
Yeah, I can't think of any either. And
sorry?
Yeah, I've been doing stuff like this for a long time. This is the Larry who used to program in APL.
Right.
Computer stuff for a long time.
Right.
And so I'm pretty good at search.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know what else to tell you.
Or install a custom spell check.
Right.
Okay.
Now, the other thing to try is turn off all your other extensions. There may be something interfering with it.
Yeah, well, I just went to the bottom where it said reset and cleanup, and I told it to restore settings to the original defaults, and that's one of the things that does.
Hmm.
It says it will clear all extensions and temporary data like cookies.
Okay.
Well, so, it clears those, but it doesn't turn off the extensions. So the extensions are still running.
It said it will disable.
Did it? Okay.
That's what my computer tells me will happen when you reset settings.
Well, then it should be right.
All right. Well, you know what? Another thing you can do, stay listening to the show today. chances are good somebody is listening to this and has another idea that we haven't thought of yet.
Okay.
And if they bring it up, we want to make sure that you hear it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay.
Yep, thanks.
Thanks for your call.
Okay. Yeah, you're welcome. Have a blessed day.
Goodbye.
You too.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I don't, I mean, that's everything you're supposed to be able to do.
Strange. Well, so yeah, I would try, if it were my own machine, I would try reinstalling Chrome and see if that made a difference.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what else could have done it, although, heaven knows, it's Windows.
Well, I want to take a minute and wish my brother a happy birthday today. Today is his birthday. He is
happy
out.
Birthday.
My brother Don, he's out in Massachusetts. And,
Don, listening, of course.
Oh, absolutely. Why wouldn't he?
Yay, Don!
He will appreciate that.
If he's not listening, everybody who knows him in Massachusetts, call him up and ask him why the heck he's not listening.
That's right.
Harass him today on his birthday.
That's right. That's right. No, he's a good guy, and I don't get to see him nearly as often as I would like to. So,
oh, that's cool.
I'm happy to be able to wish him a happy birthday today.
Very nice. Very, very nice. Happy birthday. Oh, you can't sing it.
I think you can now.
It's off copyright. So happy birthday, dear Don.
That's right.
Happy birthday to you. Hey.
So I've been playing with Box.com at work today.
Uh-oh.
Well, not today, but this past week. And I've made some interesting discoveries with how the Mac interworks with Box.com that I thought I would share while I'm here as a public service.
First, I think we need to know what Box.com is.
Yeah. Well, you might have heard of cloud storage.
Have heard of it.
Okay. And there are several different vendors who make use of cloud storage. Apple, of course, has iCloud, and Google has Google Drive. And there are third-party companies like Dropbox who make cloud storage where you can get a certain amount of storage for free, and you can move your files to it, and any machines that you have that are all signed into the same Dropbox account will have a folder on them, and anything you add from one machine cascades to the others. So it's a very easy way to do simple file sharing between the two. There's another company that we use where I work, and it is a competitor to Dropbox called Box.com, and they also have tools that you can install on your local Mac that allow you to move information to and from your cloud storage. Now, there is a incompatibility with one part of this, and it wasn't a big deal until I learned this.
Until it
was a big deal, right? So you can go to their website. You can upload and download things at Box's website all day long, no problem. But if you use one of these Box.com applications on your local Mac, it isn't fully compatible with the way the Mac handles icons and the Finder interface. So in the Finder, you have the ability to have icons, and you can position them around the window the way you want. You can put them and arrange them spatially, I call it. So if you want to take all your icons and arrange them in a circle, you can do that. If you want to arrange them in a grid, you can do that too. But when you open that folder again, Box does not save the positions of those icons. So if you're somebody who likes to arrange things and have all of your documents over here on the left and all of your folders over there on the right, or if you have projects that you want to be in the middle, Box will not necessarily respect those decisions you've made. And when you reopen it, it will not show up the way you're expecting.
For some people, that's not a big deal. For other people,
right,
it's a breaker.
It really is. Some people have a mind that is very visually oriented.
Right.
And they know that all of their important projects are there in the upper left corner, or all of their research is over in the upper right. And this really messes with their heads, and they have to constantly scroll for things, and it's just not great. So that was one of my discoveries this week. It's specifically the file where that's stored on the Mac is called .ds_store. And it's the, I think it's Display Services. It's a little preferences file that lives in every folder, but Box ignores anything that starts with a period because it treats it as a hidden. macOS treats it as hidden. So Box doesn't respect it, doesn't back it up, and then the Mac can't read it and doesn't know where to put the icon, so it just puts them in the default grid. And that was Thursday for me, learning that and researching that. So.
And now all next week we'll be explaining to people why they can't do what they want to do.
Well, not on the Mac. Again, if you go to Box's website and upload and download things, no problem, because it's just whatever the website decides to show things as. But if you want to integrate it more tightly with your local Mac, then it's going to be a problem if you're a visual type of person. So that was my challenge of the week there, my mini rant of the week.
I understand, and I'm glad you got that off your chest.
Thank you.
We see a lot of that sort of thing, a program that's 99% of the way there.
Yes.
You know, and there's just this one little annoying thing that, again, for some people is no big deal, and for other people is a deal breaker.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And for this particular person I was working with, this was enough to completely sour the deal.
Yep.
We had to find some other approach.
Yep. No, I get it. It's I don't know if Dropbox does any better.
That's a good question. I'll have to investigate that.
There is no connectivity here for Linux.
For Linux, for Box Drive. Well, yeah, that's true.
That's never been a problem for me because I have a website out on the web, a site that I pay for that allows me to store stuff there.
Okay.
And I just link essentially a standard window.
I see.
I open up what looks like a folder, and I'm on a window on another drive somewhere.
Right, right.
Out on the internet, so... And I can treat it as a regular drive, so I can automate backing up to it and everything else. So it's how I do my backups.
Right. Yes, and that's definitely one way to do it. If you have important data there that you need to get backed up somewhere else, it's important to know if your backup program can see that data and move it the way it's expecting to.
Right.
So definitely check into that as well.
And we tell people all the time there's levels of backup. There's local backup, which might be a separate drive on your machine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's super convenient, but not very secure.
That's right. Yeah, it's meant
to... Something happens to the machine itself,
right,
your backup is done too. So
let's talk about that just for a minute before we move
on. Sure.
A local backup, what are you protecting yourself against? That's what I like to talk about with people is,
right,
here's what we call the threat model that we're that we're talking about. Right. What is this intended to protect you against? You know, whether it's a local drive failure or whether it's the oops, I sneezed and accidentally deleted this file, then a local backup is a nice way to get your stuff back quickly.
Right. And that's what recommends it. It's fast. Convenient. It's right there.
Right.
The problem is if something happens to your machine itself, mm-hmm. or if you're one of those people who partitions your drive and you're simply saving your data on another partition on the same drive,
right,
something happens to that drive, your data are gone anyway. So you want to have an off the machine backup. So that's why many people put network attached storage. It's essentially a hard drive that's plugged into your local network.
Right.
On your drive, on your network, and then you can connect to it from your machine and do, you know, automate your backup to that. That's the next level. So if your computer dies, you've now got a backup of your data that's not on the computer and did not die with it.
Right, a second copy separated. Right.
And that's good.
Yeah.
The problem is if, God forbid, something happens to your entire house, you now no longer have a backup.
Right, theft, fire, flood.
Right. So you need a third backup that is off-site, out of your house.
That's right.
And again, there are convenient ways to do that. Box is one, Dropbox is another. If you're on Windows, you can do that very easily. If you're on the Mac, you can do it very easily unless you want to see your stuff in your order. and if you're on Linux, there are ways to do that as well. But that way, I have now three backups. I back up from one drive to another.
Mm-hmm.
I back up to the NAS, the network attached storage on my system.
Right.
And I back up out to the internet. The likelihood that all three of those copies will die, all four, including the original.
Yeah, you've got lots of layers working here. That's
right,
good.
Right.
That's what you want, is a layered approach.
Right. The likelihood... If, in fact, some catastrophe happens where all four of those copies are gone,
mm-hmm.
the last thing I'm going to worry about is getting my data back.
Yeah, something bigger is going on.
Right, exactly. So for those of you who are on your home machines and it's just your letter to Aunt May or whatever it is, that's fine. I don't care. But if you're running a small business,
mm-hmm.
there's nothing more heartbreaking than this is all my data.
Yep.
and I've lost it.
This is my stuff for clients. This is my QuickBooks information. This is my financial information. That's the stuff that you're going to wish you had a copy of.
Right.
And it's so cheap to get the backup software installed and have it run and just have it report to you. Most of the time I recommend third-party tools, CrashPlan or Backblaze or something else. They can just take the files that you think are the most important and always keep those a second copy of those elsewhere.
That's exactly right.
And it makes, they're so easy now. And if you need a copy back or if you need to see something and you're in a hurry, you can go to your phone and get a list of the things that have backed up and tap one. And it, if it's a Word document, it will just show up on your phone screen if you needed to see it.
Exactly right.
It's so much nicer now than it ever used to be.
Yep. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Jacob from Ontario, New York. Hiya, Jacob. How are things?
Things are okay. I got one question, and it's just been bothering me. I've been on AOL since day one.
Okay.
Is there any way that I could eliminate AOL off my computer and Yahoo? I mean, just because I'm just using Gmail now. How do you get rid of that?
Well, you know, I will admit that it's been a while since I've made use of AOL. I know back in the olden days, it was an actual, you know, back in the days when they were sending floppy disks and CDs out to everybody on the planet.
By the tons.
It was an actual piece of software you'd install on your computer. And I know since then they've gone to a more web-based approach, at least for mail. Maybe you guys know more about it than I do.
Right. So how do you connect to the internet, Jacob?
Yeah.
I got a Mac, and I just go to my Gmail, but I still have.
No, I'm sorry, I'm back a step. Hold on, Jacob. Are you on a cable internet or dial up or?
No. DSL. I got Spectrum.
Okay. So the reason I ask is because back in the day, AOL was how you, in fact, connected to the internet.
You had to use one of their numbers.
Right.
And
dial-up.
If you aren't doing dial-up through AOL, then it's simply a matter of, A, if you have an AOL icon on your desktop, just throw it away.
Yep.
Or uninstall it.
Uninstall it, yeah. And the same would be true of Yahoo. If it's just a website you go to, just don't bother to go to that website anymore.
Okay, I mean, but what if you still keep on getting messages and messages? I mean, doesn't it clutter up your computer?
Well, it can. It depends on how you're getting them. Are you talking about AOL Instant Messenger?
Yeah, emails.
Well, if it's email and it's coming from AOL, are you getting it through AOL or are you getting it in Gmail?
No, I'm getting it from AOL. I do have Gmail, but I want to keep that.
All right. Then here's what you can do. If it's a commercial email, that is to say it's some sort of spam or whatever it is.
Yes.
Down at the bottom of any legitimate email will be an unsubscribe button or link. Click on that and unsubscribe.
Okay. I've been doing that, for a long time, but I don't think it works sometimes because...
No, sometimes it does not. The other thing is, if you're no longer interested in your AOL or Yahoo email accounts, just stop looking at them. Eventually, they'll fill up with spam.
Okay.
And you don't care because you're not looking at them anymore.
So just that's all you do then, right?
Just that's all you do. You used to not be able to close an AOL account. So you can certainly look around and see if that's possible. The way I got off of AOL is I actually had to change my credit card.
Okay.
Because they would not stop hitting it.
Hitting
every
your card?
Year. Yeah. But my suggestion is just if you can, just get off AOL and Yahoo. If not, just stop going there and take it out of your head.
It's kind of hard to do, but I'll do that.
Yeah,
because you always want to wondering what's going on.
Sure, no, I get it.
You try to email your friends and people that you're not using it anymore, but it still comes up.
Yeah, sometimes people don't get the message.
No.
One of the problems, of course, with AOL and Yahoo is they have lousy spam filtering. Gmail has great spam filtering.
Yeah, Oh, yeah, it does really.
Yeah.
Okay,
so,
yeah. Well, I'll do that. I thank you very much.
Yeah, but my suggestion would be to all the people who are still emailing you at AOL, send them one last letter that says, I no longer get mail at AOL. If you're going to talk to me, you have to do it at my Gmail address.
Oh. Okay.
And then just stop looking at AOL and Yahoo.
Okay, okay, I'll try that.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but, you know, tough love sometimes, right?
Yeah, I can say it's from day one. It's got how many years?
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. yeah, it's hard. Once you get known as such and so at AOL.com,
yeah,
getting people to change that address is very, very hard.
Oh, it's true. Absolutely.
It's one of the reasons I very early got asknick.com.
Because then you own that.
I own that domain. I get my email. I get my email through Gmail.
Right. But it's your identity.
At that domain. Well, it's my identity, but Gmail handles all the spam.
Right. Which is the best of both worlds.
Exactly. But yeah, it's true. Your email address for many, many decades has been your identity on the internet.
Right.
And certainly it's the way people make contact with you, except now, of course, it's just Facebook. But if they're still using email, your email account is very much you.
Mm-hmm.
And so changing it is hard. But if you change it to something generic like Gmail, we tell people all the time, no matter who their internet service provider is, don't get your mail through them. Because if you change providers, you have to change your email.
Right.
But if you have a Gmail address or an Apple.com address or a Microsoft, whatever they call it, address, you never have to change that.
That's right.
No matter who your ISP is. So I have a friend who moved from Rochester to South Carolina.
Okay.
And nobody even
noticed.
There was
no Spectrum there, right?
Right,
He had to change providers.
But his email was Gmail.
Right, so no big deal.
So what? The only thing was during the trip down and until he got hooked up the next day, which shows you it wasn't Spectrum.
Yes,
he couldn't get email. But when he was done with that, it was done, and he was done. So get a non internet service
ISP,
provider address. Yeah.
Right.
All right, that music tells me you wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but we know you're a slow learner, so we're going to give you a chance to do it again. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and this is the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we can remain member-supported. Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side. Don't go too far.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this second hour, as Nick would always say.
That's right.
Of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Nick Francesco.
That's right.
And we're just running a little off here today.
That's right. We got caught in the hallway with a question. You know how it is. If you're one of the tech folks, you know how it is.
Yeah, they always, I got this quick question. How many times years have we heard that, Nick?
The question is quick.
Yeah, that's
the answer that takes a half an hour.
Yeah, that's what always slays me. You know, folks say, well, I just got a quick question for you. And they can see that you're in a hurry or you want to go do something.
What is nuclear fission?
Yeah, right.
How much time do you have?
Right. No, it's always my pleasure to answer those questions. All right, in a little bit of a hurry. And it's always my pleasure to answer those questions. But sometimes there are other things that take precedence. And in this particular case, getting back on the air apparently wasn't one of them because I didn't make it.
That's all right. You made it.
I did make it eventually.
We're here now.
And we're back to the phones. And our next caller is Rich from Rochester, New York. Hi, Rich. What's up?
Hi.
Hello.
Yeah. When you were talking about the cloud services, it brought up a question for me.
Sure.
I've just acquired a second MacBook. I have a 2009 and I have a 2011. One
okay.
is running on El Capitan, the other High Sierra. I want to leave one at work, one at home, and be able to update all the files on them in some easy way. So they're basically, you know, identical in terms of files.
Okay.
And I'm wondering what the easiest way to do this.
The challenge is going to be the OSs and the differences between them. You said you had one that was on High Sierra, which is macOS 10.13, and
right.
the other one was, what, El Cap?
Yeah.
Okay, which is, I believe, 10.11?
Yeah, that's as far as that machine can go.
Okay, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to fire up my MacBook Pro, and I'm going to go over to Chrome, and I'm going to Google for Dropbox System Requirements Mac.
And I, you know, probably have less than 50 gigs of data.
Okay, all right.
And it's just the data that I'd want to sync.
All right, and you want to make that data available to both machines at once.
Yeah, or just so that it's... I want to do it with a minimum of fuss.
Okay, all right.
Automatically would be great.
So, yeah, so when it comes to fuss, I myself prefer to reduce hassle whenever necessary or whenever mm-hmm. possible. Sometimes that does require that you spend a little bit of money. Is that okay with you?
How much? I mean, I'm obviously a cheap guy working with such old computers, so...
Right, well, we want to make sure that your capabilities are in line with your budget, and that the recommendations are in line with what still are able to
sure.
do what you have in mind. Let's see. Check if your device is capable. Download the latest app.
I'm not seeing specs.
Operating systems, Yosemite 10.10 up to 10.14. All right. So a company like Dropbox would be a good choice because
mm-hmm.
you can run the Dropbox client on both of your laptops.
Uh-huh.
The downside is for the amount of stuff you want to store, they are going to charge you a fee. You know, you can think of it as like rent for your
sure.
data. Let's see. So next we want to find out pricing. So we'll check that out. Live consulting on the radio, folks. You can
call exactly.
call in with your ideas too. So let's see. Dropbox. Now, Dropbox will give you a certain amount, a couple of gigs, I think, for free. But if your goal is to do all 50 or so gigs, then let's see what they offer for that. So, storage. So, for $8.25 a month, they have a line on their offerings that allows you to get up to 1,000 gigabytes. And that's what they call it. They have like a small, medium, large package. They have the small package called Basic, and that's available for free, and you get 2 gigs. Then they have the Plus package, and that's $8.25 a month, and you get 1,000 gigs. And then the super big package is called Professional. That's $16.58 a month, and you get up to 2,000 gigs. So it looks like $8.25 a month could be a good option for you.
Or...
As an alternative, Nick has an idea.
Or Google Drive.
Sure. Competitor, but yeah, always good to know what your options are.
Google Drive works with, I got it right here, Yosemite and up.
Okay, so that's 10.10. Yep, that's good.
So he's in that.
That'll fly.
It is a downloadable, installable backup and sync thing, so stuff... You. I believe the way this generally works, again, I have Linux, so I don't do this, but generally the way this works is you designate a particular folder or set of folders, and those all get copied up to Google Drive, and when you open the other machine, they'll all be copied down.
That's right.
So they're synced there.
Yep. Any changes you make on one end get synced to the other ends.
And that will be 15 gig is free. 100 gig is $2 a month.
Okay. That's a better price.
If you want a terabyte, it's $10 a month.
Right. I do know that Dropbox in general is pretty well compatible with the Mac. I've not played as much with Google Drive.
Right.
You know, do some homework there.
What about iCloud? I mean, is that the same sort of thing?
iCloud is a cloud storage destination. I have not actively used it in terms of just having it pretend to be a drive. I have used it for backing up my cell phone data so that I can transfer to new phones easily. I have used it for backing up photographs. They have the Photos service that allows you to back up to iCloud. I have not actively used it as a drive before, so I don't have a lot of experience with it.
Do I need a drive? I'm just trying to back up, you know, data, just files.
Yep. Well, 50 gigs is a decent amount.
50 gigs on iCloud is also $1 a month.
It is. Yeah. Again, I need to do research to find out if you can treat it just as a volume.
I don't know that, but I'm just saying the storage itself is essentially twice as costly as Google. Google's 100 gig for $50 for $1 a month, and iCloud is 50 gigs for $1 a month.
Right. Okay. Would one be easier than the other? I think that would it happen automatically every time I boot up.
Yep, Dropbox will store your files on their server, and any changes that you make to those files on your the synced versions on your local machine, the changes get pushed up to Dropbox's cloud copy of them, and then those changed files get cascaded down to your other laptop, whether that's at home or at work.
And that's exactly the way Google Drive works as well.
Okay.
Okay. And does iCloud do that also?
I don't know.
Familiar with it.
Yeah, I'm reading here as quickly as I can. Keep listening, and I might have more information soon.
So basically what happens is with Google Drive and with Dropbox, it essentially looks like a folder on your desk, and you make that folder the place where you save everything.
Right.
So you go into your office suite, and you say, my storage place is that folder.
Now it goes there rather than your documents.
Right. And then when you set it up on the other machine, you say, sync it there as well. Now everything that you store on one machine goes up to the cloud. And then when you open the other machine, it copies all that new stuff down to your machine.
Got it. Right. So you can't have your files on your desktop, or could you just have the desktop?
Well, you can have that folder on the desktop.
The folders could be in there. Okay, got it.
That one folder that is Google Drive.
Got it.
Right, okay. You may make a shortcut of that to the desktop, and then you're done.
Right.
Somebody was saying that iCloud Drive is 99 cents a month for 50 gig. iCloud Drive is the feature to sync files between devices.
There you go.
Yep. Yeah, I'm looking it up here. Apple has a support page that talks about setting up iCloud. Their tool is called iCloud Drive. And as long as they really want you to have the latest iOS and the latest macOS on your devices, which you don't have at the moment.
Well, that's another reason I suggest Google Drive, partially because right now you say you've got 50 gig. Well, if next month you've got 51 gig or 52 gig, you're going to pay another buck a month on iCloud, but it's still, you know, you get up to 100 gig on Google Drive for a buck a month.
Got it. Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't really have 50 gig. It's probably 40. I'm not a heavy user, but you know, I have hopes. Okay.
Right.
Okay, well, it sounds like they'll all work. I don't know which one I trust any more than the others. But.
Well, it's always a game of who do you trust. But the other thing is you're going to have multiple copies of your data now, right? Because you're going to have a copy on your Mac at home.
Right.
You're going to have a copy in Google Drive or wherever you pick. And you're going to have a copy in at work.
Right. And I'll have a backup drive.
And you better have a backup drive somewhere.
That's true.
Right. And okay. Sounds good.
Yep.
Sounds good.
There you go.
Thank you much.
And, of course, with each of these, you get a free tier, so you can try it for free.
That's right.
Just move a little bit of your data up, see what it feels like.
Take a machine to work, see if it shows up there.
Boom.
Oh, okay.
Before you pay any money.
Yep, try it before you buy it.
Okay. All the better.
There you go.
Great. Okay. Thank you much.
All right. Absolutely. Thanks for calling, our pleasure. Rich.
Yep. Yeah, I was looking up iCloud Drive. It has minimum system requirements of Yosemite, so that's 10.10. So he has what he needs in order to run Apple's iCloud Drive as well. But that's something I should do a little bit more research on. I've been a Dropbox person for so long, and we've been using Box at work for so long that I haven't been looking at the Apple offerings.
The Apple offering stuff and the Google stuff, but Google seems to be the cheapest.
Yeah.
And the big thing is that if it does what it looks like it does for a buck a month,
right?
I don't know how you beat that.
No, it's true. And I tell the people I work with who are iPhone users, they say, well, it constantly says I need to increase my iCloud storage. Should I do that? And I said, well, how much is it? And they said, I don't know. It's like 99 cents a month. And I said, it cost you more than 99 cents to have this conversation with me. Definitely do it. It's 12 bucks. It's, you know, what costs 12 bucks? A pizza?
Right.
So you pay more for
half a pizza these days.
Right. So go ahead and get that. And the number one thing that it makes so much easier is transitioning to your next phone.
That's exactly right.
So you run that backup, automate it, have it pushed up to the cloud. When you get your next phone, you sign in as yourself. And your phone says, oh, I see all these settings that are saved up here. Is it okay if I restore from those? You say yes, and then you're done.
And you're done. It's over. Same thing when I got this new Android phone. Mm-hmm. An old Android phone. It's a Pixel 1.
Yes. New to you.
It's new to me.
New to you.
I signed in with my name. I waited 5 minutes, and it looked just like my old phone.
That's right.
Everything was there. I could look at pictures up on Google Photos. I could look at my documents. I could do everything I had done with zero pain.
That's right. And you and I are old enough to remember the days of getting a new computer, and then moving to a new computer was an entire project.
You wrote page after page of what you had installed on the old machine.
By hand.
You would have to then by hand, you wrote it by hand and you installed it by hand on the new machine.
That's right. And if you were lucky, you could write your data files out to floppies and then walk them, you know, over to the new machine, put them in and load them back onto the drive.
I remember more than once figuring out how many floppies I needed to move data to a new machine, and then making that trip to Circuit City or Computer City.
And floppies by the case.
Yes, exactly. And coming home with all of those, and then, you know, you get about halfway to the checkout line, you think, one more box.
Just in case,
one more box. And then by the time you get back, it's like, all right, I'll just grab two boxes. I'm here.
Right. And that's why when zip disks came out and they could suddenly hold like 70 floppies worth, it was like, oh, please, yes. And that's why they sold a million of those.
I remember, and I still got it to this day. It's called it's a device called Thunder.
Okay.
And what it is, it's like a little case, and it's got at either end.
The USB?
No, it's got connections for internet.
Oh, okay.
So you plug one end into one computer, you plug it into the other.
You made a mini network.
A crossover cable, yeah.
Yeah, it's literally a crossover cable. Inside it says, oh, here's, I found this other computer. So then I could see the other drive on, say, the top part of the window, and down below was the machine I was on. So I could sit there and drag files over. It wasn't the fastest, but, you know, like you say, instead of having to do all those disks, I thought I was in heaven because I was able to now move stuff from people's machine from one to the other without having to take the hard drive out of the machine, try to hook it up to the other one, moving everything over. I was just able to quick boom, boom, boom. Didn't have to undo the case or anything. It was slick.
Yeah.
It was great.
Nowadays, of course, you just plug it into your network.
That's right.
And I have gigabit network at home. So last time I moved one, you know, all my files over from one machine to the other, it was like, there you go.
Trunk, done.
Time to go get a drink. And when I come back, here it is. Made some coffee, came back. There it was.
Yeah, it's so convenient now. And the cloud backups are even better.
Well, that's exactly it. You know, we talk about whatever ecosystem you're on. I've said many times I'm a Google guy, but whatever ecosystem you're on, when everything is in that ecosystem, it all works like butter.
Yeah. You're far better, more likely to have that happen.
Yep.
Now,
yep.
There was a time, and I'm...
We were all there.
We were all there, where Apple did not do a great job with cloud services. You couldn't really trust that things were going to happen the way they were supposed to. But those times are gone. Since iCloud as a service came out, I've really been very happy with their synchronization and their ability to store backups and restore them to new devices. And, well, again, for Apple, it's always, you know, what can you buy from them, a new piece of hardware, and how can they make it easy to buy your next one?
Right.
And that's pretty much everything they've been doing for the last 20 years has been, how do I make it easy to sell another device to somebody?
Right.
And one of the ways you do that is by making it easy to transition from one to the other.
Right. When I said, one of the things that was so easy was I started up this new phone, and I said, I didn't even think about it. I said, I think I'll go look at my email.
Right. Logged in as yourself.
Well, once I was logged into the phone,
sure.
Everything else was magic.
Yep.
I said, I think I'll just go check my email. And as it booted up, I said, what do you mean you're going to check your email?
Yeah.
This is a new phone. Oh, it's all there.
Oh, wait. I didn't. Right. Well, how's it going to do that? I didn't set up the. How's it going to log into the. Oh, there it is.
There it all is.
Huh.
Yep.
All right.
Yep. It was amazing.
Nice job, Google.
Nice job, Google. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Mike. What's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to get a clarification. Last week, you talked about Google Plus and you read some ominous things. I was concerned about the photos. If they're in the cloud already, if Google Plus is going to go away, does that affect the photos?
No.
You had mentioned that, but I would like to get a clarification if they're that safe and I can sleep at night.
You can sleep at night. Google Plus is going away on April 2nd. They were at least smart enough not to say it's going away on April 1st. Because then no one would believe them.
Right.
But Google Plus is not photos. The Google Photos will remain up in Google Photos. So if you go to photos.google.com, I think it is. Hold on, I can tell you in just one click. Photos.google.com. Your photos will all be there. You can set up your phone to automatically save all your photos to Google, to photos.google.com. And that is in no way, there is no impact on that when Google Plus goes away.
Good. Okay. That's what I thought you said, but I was kind of concerned. Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure.
Enjoy your rest.
Bye now.
Yep.
Yep. Have fun. I can't tell you how much I've come to rely on Google Photos. Now, again, I use takeout.google.com.
Sure. So you
used to be called the Data Liberation Front.
Right.
I'll never stop saying that. to back up all my photos.
Yeah.
Of course, I've already got a copy on my phone.
Right.
That doesn't change.
Yep.
Now I have a copy in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And then I download a copy to my machine,
mm-hmm.
which I then put off site, and I win.
Right. Yeah, you're covered that way.
Yeah.
And it iOS folks can get in on that, too. There is a Google Photos app for iOS so that you can see all of your photos. And you can tell your phone to automatically upload a copy of new photos directly to the Google Cloud, which is very convenient and makes it easy for, you know, one of the things that I like to do is get photos printed for people. You know, we all grew up in an age where getting photo prints was not a big deal.
Right.
But now with digital and we share things online, so having a tangible thing in your hands that's a photo of an event that you went to with someone or
you can just
family.
Like you can on Apple on Google Photos, you can send away for a photo album.
That's true. An actual bound album.
Yes.
If you want. One of the things I do that's maybe not quite as nice as a full bound album, but definitely takes a little bit less time, is go to the website of your favorite drugstore who has a photo printer in it and it's not very expensive. You know, you can get out of there for way less than $10 and get lots and lots of prints done in all sorts of creative ways that they have. You upload them from the app or from a website, walk into your local drugstore and walk out with your photos. And it's so nice to be able to hand those to people.
Right. And Google Photo Storage, if your photo is under 16 megapixels,
right,
16 megapixels or less,
mm-hmm.
is free. And on, I believe iPhones are 12 megapixels.
I would need to look that up.
But when you set it up, one of the things you can say is store it in that 16 megapixel format.
Okay.
So you've got the original size on your phone.
Right. The full one.
Right. And you've got the free back. And 16 megapixels
still pretty
is
good.
A lot of megapixels.
That's right.
But I think that's more than most phones do these days. Anyway, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Hi, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a question about the storage you were talking about before. I have, like, let's just say four computers with different capacities. So my desktop computer probably has close to 300 gig of data, photos, all that other stuff.
Right.
That's the top end. The low end is my tablet, which has 128 gig.
If right.
I don't want everything I put in the cloud to try to come down to my tablet. I want to be able to pick and choose.
Sure, and that's why you wouldn't use Dropbox or the Google Drive app. Right. If you, for example, if you use iPhotos, the only place they're stored is on your phone and in the cloud.
I don't have an iMachine. They're all Windows machines.
No. Excuse me. Well, Google Photos, for example, photos.google.com.
Right.
So you take a picture, you save it up to Google Drive, to Google Photos. And you now have a copy in your phone and a copy on Google Photos. And if you want to see that picture, you just open up your browser on your desktop and go look at it. And if you want to download it, you can download it. And that's the only time it takes up storage on any one of your physical devices.
Okay, but you kept saying that when you put it on one, it's up in the cloud. When you open your next machine, it syncs down to the other machine.
That is specific to programs for Box and Dropbox, and a special Google Drive program that you would have to install.
Okay, so just Google Drive in general, you can put it all up there.
You just put it all up there, and who cares? I have, for example, I use Google Drive. I've said this before. I've got almost 20,000 documents up on Google Drive. And when I use my desktop, of course, they're all on there because it's one of the places I back them up to. But when I use my laptop, none of them are there. They're all just living in the cloud, and I just use them in the cloud and save them in the cloud. And the same on my phone. I certainly don't have 20,000 documents on my phone, but I can reach any one of them, edit any one of them, print any one, not that I print, any one of them, do all of that stuff, because they're all just living in the cloud.
Yeah, well, I guess I got confused when you a number of times so it syncs to the new machine, and I don't want it to sync to the new machine.
No, absolutely, but that was specific to Rich's purpose.
Okay, so Google Cloud.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm still Dennis Worcester.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, suddenly there's bass in my ears.
Yes. Isn't it nice? You're trying some new headphones? Little Van Halen.
Yeah, the studio has these lovely
bumper music,
Sennheiser microphone headsets. But I've been using my fairly, well, let's be honest, cheap.
Cheap. Same here.
Old headphones with all the padding is gone and only one ear works. And
tradition.
And I suddenly thought to myself, I can't hear the callers well.
Right.
And they all sound like... And I thought, well, either...
Let's see what we can address.
Well, the new ones I just got for home, it's weird because, you know, like most of them, you know, the typical wire, this looks like almost coming out of it, like a leather material.
Mm. Nice. Oh, well, they're well
padded.
I've
seen the fabric ones.
Yeah.
They're woven, woven on the outside.
No, kind of I'm going to get like another pair because, you know, I got to replace these like you. You know, I'm hearing out of one side.
So. Yeah.
All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Kevin from Greece, New York. Hi, Kevin. What's up?
Using LibreOffice because I don't want to pay for an office suite.
Good for you.
That's a very good idea. I wanted to play with the database function in it, and it says I need to have a Java runtime environment. And I went out and got one, and it doesn't want to install it. So I'm wondering if there's something about that.
What operating system are you running?
Windows 10.
Okay. Where did you
get... where did I get it? Where did I get the download from?
Was it from Oracle?
I think it said Oracle. I would have to go back and check my history. But
right.
Java setup 8u201.exe. That's the name of the file. It says it's from Oracle. You know, the file description.
Well, name that file again, please.
Java setup 8u201.exe.
I'm searching.
I believe the latest model, the Java runtime environment is really this. I think they just use JDK now, or JRE rather, the Java runtime environment.
I see version 11, Java SE 1102.
Yeah, 1102 is the standard environment, but I'm looking at JRE, and you can download the Java runtime environment as well. I'm just looking at it right now. It's 8U201.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the newest
one. That
sounds
about right. Okay, and that's the one you said you had, right?
Yeah, that's what I got.
Okay.
Okay, and when you try to run it, is it a .exe?
It's a .exe, and I believe I ran it, and it installed it into, you know, C program files, x86, Java, JRE, and a bunch of numbers, and then there's a couple folders under that. But when I point LibreOffice at it to say select a Java runtime environment, and I pointed at those folders, it says the folder you selected does not contain a Java runtime environment. Please select a different folder. So it's not... So LibreOffice isn't seeing it. I don't know what other file it expects to see in here.
Yeah.
And did you already say which version of LibreOffice you were using?
I believe I'm on 6.0, which
okay.
I know is not quite up to date, but 6.0.7. something.
Okay.
Yeah, there's also two versions of the runtime environment. There's the 32-bit version and the 64-bit version.
Okay.
Those
if
might
you
need
have
to match.
The wrong one,
it won't run.
You might need to match those with whatever version of LibreOffice you
it
have.
It has to match LibreOffice, yes.
Right.
Okay, so then you make sure I get a 64-bit. Okay. All right.
That
but,
might be something to try.
All right, and the place to go is Oracle...
Yeah, what I'm doing is...
We're going to grab this and we'll put it on the website.
I'm going to put it on the website. That's going to take me just a minute.
Okay.
I apologize.
It'll be there soon.
I don't multitask like I did 40 years ago.
But if you go to soundbites.org, right?
Yep.
With Y?
Yeah. Soundbites.org with a Y.
And you'll post it up there.
Yep, in just a few minutes.
Okay. All right. And that'll be the EXE, the correct EXE file.
It's going to take you to the page where you can choose Windows and Linux and Mac,
right.
And it'll be 64 and 32, and you'll be able to pick specifically which one you need.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
You got it. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
I'm installing that. I'm creating a post right now.
Yes,
I'm posting that right now.
These new headphones got you all messed up.
They do, don't they?
All mixed up now.
Of course, you can't embed the content. I didn't want you to embed the content, but it's now in the process of being published, so it should be up there by the time I finish talking, and it takes you to the Java standard environment, runtime environment page. It lists Linux, Mac, Solaris, and Windows for 8.01, 8.02. So I would get 8.02 where I you. That's the latest one. And of course, you have to accept the license agreement and yada, yada, yada. But then you have a choice of Windows x86, which is the 32-bit version, or Windows x64, which is, of course, the 64-bit version. And you have a choice in each of those to download a compressed file or the .exe, which is probably what you want.
Somebody said here, maybe he got the SDK and not the JRE.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, which is why I sent him to the page.
Java.com takes you to the runtime installer.
Right. And that's why I gave him the link directly to the download of the JRE.
All right, let's back up a half a step for the people who don't know the difference between JRE and JDK.
Okay, the Java is a programming language.
Came out in the 90s.
Came out in the 90s. Microsoft.
Sun.
Sun, and now Oracle put it out in a bunch of different versions. There's the standard edition in which you can write and create programs. There is the runtime environment, which is all you need to run programs that somebody else wrote, like the database parts of LibreOffice.
So the original idea was that developers would write for Java once. Back in the 90s, you had different OSs. You had the Mac OS, you had Windows, you had different versions of Unix, and you couldn't really write an application and have it run on every single place. You'd have to write different versions of it, one per operating system.
Right.
So Java came along and said, tell you what, we're going to make a pretend machine and give it a
that hides inside your real machine.
And it's going to interpret all of your instructions, Mr. Programmer or Mrs. Programmer, and it will look the same on every OS.
Right.
So that you'll write once and
run anywhere.
That was their tagline at the time. So to do that, you needed the Java Development Kit, if you were a developer, to make the application.
But you only need that to write programs.
Correct. That's the tool set you need to make the application. But in order to run it, you need the runtime environment, and that is different for each OS and 64 and 32-bit versions.
Right. And that in particular is exactly what Kevin needs in order to run the programs that somebody else already wrote in Java.
Right, and apparently there's some portion of LibreOffice that requires this
Database stuff does, yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's database connectivity and back-end stuff.
Oh, I see.
It's quite amazing. For anybody who's used Access, it's very, very much the same.
Okay.
And it lets you connect with local databases or remote databases. I use it quite regularly to connect to the databases on my websites. It's really kind of amazing and very well put together.
Cool.
And it lets you do everything, including, you know, one of the things that I always lusted after in Access that a lot of other things didn't do was the ability to create a graphic that was your data tables and the links between them and one to many and all that other stuff. Yeah, LibreOffice does that.
Okay. So you can do that entity relationship diagram.
Right.
Okay, cool.
And that's very cool. And LibreOffice does all of that. It does not give you a database, but it connects to any database you have.
Okay.
So if you've already got a database on your Windows or Mac machine, or if you've got a on your Linux machine, or if you've got one out on the web somewhere, on another drive or out on, you know, the web itself, that will work. So I can go in and play around with and edit and change.
And query things.
Query things and do whatever reports. I want to do with it. Yeah.
Wow, cool. So it probably uses that ODBC connection.
Any one of many. The one I most commonly use is ODBC. But
I see.
Office Database Connect, ODB. What's the O stand for?
Open.
Open Database Connect. Yeah. You can use whatever you want to use. And it works pretty nicely and it works pretty easily. So if you're a database geek, You can do an amazing amount of stuff in LibreOffice.
Cool. Yeah. And those answers were by, and I'm Steve Ray.
Yeah. Oh, were they? Good for you, Steve.
That's right.
Steve's paying attention.
Goes, and I'm Steve Ray.
That's good.
He must be sitting on a mesa somewhere in the Southwest getting a Wi-Fi signal off a passing plane.
That's right.
Or a flying duck, I think.
That might be it.
Laden.
Heck, a plane spaz, yeah. I mean, we're only an hour and 45 minutes into the show.
That's right.
He's just finally saying, and I'm Steve Ray.
Do you know how long it takes a horse to get up to the top of some of those mesas?
How long?
An hour and 45 minutes.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought we were going for something else.
No, that's it. How?
Like I say, it's got to be carrier pigeon.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
But yeah, so that's the deal with LibreOffice if you're looking for something like that. It's an elegant little solution.
Lone balloon.
Yeah.
Loon balloon.
Right. Google Loon is their Wi-Fi in a balloon.
Right. To help places where they might need to get better coverage.
Right. And clearly, Steve brought his own Loon balloon with him. That's very nice of him.
Well, whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes. All right. I got a quick news item here. For those of you speaking of Windows 7, Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008 users will imminently have to deploy a mandatory patch if they want to continue updating their systems.
Okay.
Currently, Microsoft Windows updates using two different hashing algorithms to enable Windows to detect tampering or modification to the update files, SHA-1 and SHA-2. Windows 7 and Server 2008 verify the SHA-1 passage. Windows 8 and newer use the SHA-2 hashes instead. March's patch Tuesday will include a standalone update for Windows 7, Windows Server 2008 R2, and WSUS to provide support for patches hashed with SHA-2. April's patch Tuesday will include an equivalent update for Windows Server 2008. The SHA-1 algorithm, first published in 1995, takes some input and produces a value known as a hash or a digest that's 20 bytes long. By design, any small change to the input should produce, with high probability, a wildly different hash value. SHA-1 is no longer considered to be secure, as well-funded organizations have managed to generate hash collisions to different files that nonetheless have the same SHA-1 hash. If a collision should be generated for a Windows update, it would be possible for an attacker to produce a malicious update that nevertheless appeared to the system to have been produced by Microsoft and not subsequently altered. This weakness of SHA-1 has seen its gradual deprecation from systems that use it. Modern browsers no longer trust SSL certificates that use SHA-1. The changes to Windows update are part of this continuing process of phasing out the old algorithm before phasing out Windows 7 support. Taking effect on July's patch Tuesday, which should be on the 18th of June, Windows 10 updates will only include SHA-2 hashes. From July 16th, new Windows 7 Server 2008 and Server 2008 R2 patches will only include SHA-2 hashes. And from September 16th, legacy Windows updates with dual SHA-1, SHA-2 digests will be replaced with SHA-2-only versions. With the patches in place, these changes should be seamless. Without the patches, however, machines will lose the ability to install further Windows updates. The SHA-2 patches are going to be standalone updates, so even organizations that are holding back other patches for one reason or another should be able to install them without difficulty. Are you still using Windows 7? This patch is a must.
Oh,
give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
Right. Yeah. Well, and if all of that seemed like gobbledygook, all you need to know is your computer wants to trust whatever it gets from Microsoft, and it wants to trust that it hasn't been mucked with in between the time it left Microsoft and the time it found your computer. And in order to do that, they run a little program on the file that's going to leave Microsoft, and they come up with a result. And you just have to make sure that when the same thing happens, when you receive the file and you run that same function on it,
it runs
you get the same result. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's how we make sure that nobody's mucking with things in the meantime.
And they used to use SHA-1, Hillman, and now it's SHA-2, and SHA-1 is being thrown into the garbage heap of history. And if you're using Windows 7 and you don't update, you will get you will stop getting updates even sooner than Microsoft is planning to have you.
You'll get SH already.
Well, yeah. Microsoft is going to advance to the newer standard, and your computer isn't going to understand it unless you get this particular
fix.
Yeah, you'll get a whole lot of it.
You'll get a whole lot of nothing.
Yeah.
And you know,
a bricked machine, like they've been doing so well with Windows 10 and bricking so many. And I guarantee you they're going to wind up doing it again to these Windows 7 machines.
Right.
And again, folks, at bottom line, what it means is you got to seriously think about moving away from Windows 7. You got to move towards Windows 10 or a Chromebook. Seriously, take the time. Yeah, and take the time and look at other options, because sticking with Windows 7, you're playing Russian roulette. And unless you're a tech and can stay up on top of things and everything else, it's not going to work for you.
Long-time listeners will remember that we said the same thing about Windows XP. We said the same thing about Vista. We said the same thing about pretty much every OS. Every OS has its day in the sun, and things move along. And in order to keep your data safe and to keep yourself safe online, having a supported OS is important. And
it's not a
train station that you arrive at and say, I'm here, good, I'll never have to do that again.
Right.
It's a treadmill that we all live on.
This Chromebook updated this morning, as a matter of fact. I hadn't had it on for a few days. I don't know when the update actually came by. But I turned it on this morning. I was doing some work on it. And I saw the little up arrow that said, reboot your system and you're going to get a brand new OS. I didn't even know it came down. It all happened in the background. And I didn't bother. I just kept working. When I was done, I shut it down, came here, opened it up. When I opened it up, it was a brand new operating system. Done. Cool. That's how easy it is to do Chrome OS updates. They happen automatically. In the background, all you have to do is shut down your machine, start it up again, and of course you're going to do that every day anyway. And when you do that, you're done. So it's real easy. That and as we keep telling people, save money. You don't need most people don't need more than a Chromebook, and it's less expensive, and it's less of a pain. And everything is so simple. So simple.
In a good way.
In a great way. And most people do everything on the web nowadays anyway. So why not?
Right. Right. I think people are nervous. They're afraid that sometime there might be some limitation they're going to bump their head on.
Right.
But having someone like you to call if they realize they need to maybe do something that they hadn't considered before is really nice to be able to have that option to call us and call the show for free. And get great answers. I mean, what a service.
It's a service that we provide. And people love us because everybody loves somebody who gives something away for free.
Well, and you can get a good answer, a good knowledgeable answer. Right?
Yeah, right.
And
yeah,
if we don't know it, we can look it up for you on the fly, like we've done today for a couple of people. And usually it's not a big deal, as long as you know what you're searching for.
Right. By the way, you can get the Google Drive file system for Chromebooks, too.
Okay.
As well as the Microsoft Cloud OneDrive thing, and all that other stuff.
Good to know.
Well,
thanks for having me, guys. It's been fun as always.
Well, it's always a joy to have you here. I think we all know that. And that music tells us that we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank Dennis Worster, who stepped in at the last moment for Steve Ray, who's lost.
Anytime, guys.
Wandering lost somewhere in the Southwest.
That's right. I'm sure he'll be
great work
soon.
Again. Did great work again. I want to thank Dave Enright for remembering to show up at all. He's not sure where he is, but he did show up here, and that's the important part. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Just in case you'd forgotten, that's Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.